think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 236 of Low Limit Football on this 4th of March, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the race is on in England as Manchester City overtake Liverpool in the standings. We'll look at who will cross the finish line first tonight. Spurs-Arsenal is full of controversy. We're going to discuss what went wrong in that 1-1 draw over the weekend. The race in Germany is in a dead heat as Dortmund lose to Augsburg on the weekend while Bayern win at Mönchengladbach. Now just 2 goals separate the two teams who are on a collision course for Der Klassiker on April 4th, and MLS opens their weekend with goals galore and last-minute winners. We're going to discuss that and more with Atlanta Sports HQ writer Matt Fowler, who will be joining us in just a little bit, but let me get my main man in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my friend?
Doing well, Joe. I have to say something. You know, we talked a lot of football recently and obviously, you know, soccer, yeah. But I do have to ask. You know that photo with Kylian Mbappe and Odell Beckham Jr.? I have to say to yourself, I have to ask you, man, what kind of position would Mbappe play in the NFL? Do you think he would cut it in the NFL? Maybe as like a wide receiver or a linebacker? What would be the best position for Kylian Mbappe?
Yeah, best, you know, because of build, I would say wide receiver. I would almost, though, because, you know, you see Mbappe as an intelligent player, right, on the pitch? Mm. And we've seen him, you know, play intelligently, play with his brain. I would almost want him as a defensive back, given his build and his mind. Maybe somebody like a free safety or a D-back, I think, would be the best spot for Kylian Mbappe, which is funny because we're talking about an offensive player on the football pitch, on the soccer pitch, as a defensive player in the NFL or in American football, right?
Well, why would you put him there, though?
Because I think the defensive back position not only has to have speed and strength, but it has to have brains. It has to be able to read what an offense is giving them and then execute accordingly.
Now, Joe, you are a Cowboys fan.
Yes.
So I will ask you this. If you had to pick one soccer player in the world, anywhere in the world, that's playing, obviously, not in the past, not that's retired, who would you pick to be on your team to solve the issues to make your team win the Super Bowl? Essentially, what is that one missing piece that you need to win the Super Bowl? And if you can get it from a soccer player, who is it? What position would he play and why?
Current player or even retired?
No, current. That's playing
current
right
only.
Now.
Current only is playing right now. You know, if it was retired, I would say Andrea Pirlo. And I'm trying to think who that equivalent player would be, because I want the most intelligent. For me, part of me feels like the Cowboys are still a quarterback away or an intelligent player away. Mm-hmm. An intelligent player in a skilled position. So, you know,
Ronaldo?
Jorginho. No, not so much. Ronaldo's more strength than brains for me. I'd go Jorginho.
Jorginho
right now. Because I'm looking for that central midfielder. I'm looking for that quarterback. Luka Modric.
Pogba, Kante.
But Modric is just such so much more of an intelligent player. Luka Modric, that's going to be my final answer.
Luka Modric, and he's playing the quarterback for the Cowboys.
Exactly. That's, you know, and nothing against Dak Prescott, because I love Dak Prescott, but there are some times where I think Dak doesn't use his brain enough. Whereas his predecessor, Tony Romo, was incredibly cerebral.
And you saw that in the NFL broadcast that he does.
Exactly. So I think if you mix Dak Prescott's ability with Romo's brain, I think the Cowboys would win the Super Bowl. I really do. So, but, you know, that's hoping.
That's where you go. So Mbappe would play defense, huh?
Yeah. I would put Mbappe as either as a free safety or as a defensive back. Somebody capable of reading, especially as a free safety, somebody capable of intelligently reading the offense and then performing accordingly. That would be my pick for Mbappe. Not necessarily wide receiver. I mean, I know he can run a route, but and odds are with given his skill set, you know, if it translated from his feet to his hands, the ability to catch the ball, I get it. But I want to use his intelligence combined with all of that. So that's why I say D-back for me.
Awesome. So,
all right, man, let's get into it. And my friend, I have trivia tonight. You know, I'm going to get my 2 second Juventus in. Can I do that?
Sure, why not?
Juve needs to win 7 of their final 12 matches. If they run 7 matches straight, they will win at home. They'll win the Scudetto at home against Fiorentina, and Napoli will be mathematically unable to catch them. That is if Napoli run the table. Great thing about that is Derby d'Italia is after the Fiorentina match, and you could be in a situation, depending on how things are in the Champions League for Juve, where you could have a Derby d'Italia that is absolutely meaningless to Juve, but could mean everything in the world to Inter, given the positions and the races in the Serie A for those final playoff spots for Champions League.
It's almost as if these races for the European spots are being much more interesting to follow, and I think even more dramatic than the actual title itself. Yeah, in some leagues, of course.
In Italy, definitely. In France, definitely. This season, of course. You know, both of them. But you want the last little tidbit fact?
Sure.
If Napoli do run the table, and Juve, in fact, have to win, 7 matches to mathematically win, that would put Napoli at 92 points at the end of the season. Would it be remarkable to have a team 2 years in a row have 90 or more points and still not win the league?
That just shows how competitive Serie A has been, and thankfully it's been competitive over the last few years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then we got Fiorentina Atalanta this weekend, which was highly entertaining too. So I don't want to go down the Serie A rabbit hole. I know we've got a couple of guests that are possibly lined up in the next couple of weeks that we're going to go down the Serie A rabbit hole plenty. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that in great detail soon enough. Trivia question tonight. Ready?
Yes, do it.
Okay. Only 3 teams across Europe's top 5 leagues have scored in every league game this season. Name the 3 teams.
Ooh.
I take it you haven't seen this one yet.
I have not. No.
Oh, I gotcha.
Okay, let me ask you this. Are any of those teams in the same league?
No, 3 different leagues.
3 different leagues. Okay, cool. Leagues. That's
so.
Ooh,
good one, right?
That's a really good one. Wow. They have scored in every single game.
This season. A league game. League game. So it doesn't count Champions League, doesn't count Europa League, doesn't count domestic cups or anything like that. Just strictly league matches. Only 3 teams across the European top 5 leagues have scored in every league game this season. Name them.
I think I have 2.
Okay.
That are coming straight up my head.
2 are easy, but the third one is really hard.
Yeah, the third one is because I don't know if they haven't gone a game where they didn't score. That's what I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
So, okay. Good question. Let's see what happens.
We'll get to that answer in about 50 minutes. Let's talk about tonight's opening thoughts topic. And one of the opening thoughts topics we alluded to in the monologue is the race that is in the EPL this season. On the weekend, we saw Manchester City overtake Liverpool drawing 1-1 in the Merseyside Derby. Manchester City, I believe, winning on the weekend. I want to say 1-0, and I didn't look up. I should have looked up my facts. Winning 1-0 on the weekend, if I remember correctly, and I want to say it was against Burnley. And you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong.
Let me check.
But I think that's what it was. Now, Oh, you know what? I actually have it in front of me.
No, Bournemouth.
Bournemouth. I knew it was one of the Bs.
Where actually, it's kind of interesting. You know, they only had one shot on goal, City, and they won the entire game on that shot of goal.
Right. Also, sorry.
What am I saying? Sorry. 16 shots on goal. And they only scored one.
So just not able to. And the goal comes late with Riyad Mahrez coming on for the injured Kevin De Bruyne. Now, I have not seen any information on the extent of the De Bruyne injury, but the last time City kind of stumbled in league this season was when De Bruyne went down initially. So, you know, we talk about who's going to finish at the end, and I think the De Bruyne injury really needs to be considered here when we talk about who is best positioned to possibly win this league. I know you and I both chose Liverpool to win the EPL title at the beginning of the season, and for me, still, I think we're on pace for that. One of the big factors for me, Rob, is the schedule moving forward towards the end of the season, because I think City have a little bit of a tougher time. Mainly, I believe both teams play Chelsea still. Chelsea, Liverpool, and Chelsea City is a common opponent for both of them. But City have the Manchester Derby. They have a Manchester Derby with a Manchester United that is renewed. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer looks like he's going to be staying as the permanent manager. And United have something to prove. Not only that, they are only 1 point ahead of Arsenal right now, 2 points ahead of Chelsea for that last Champions League spot. There is a fight there that they're going to be in the middle of. United have a ton to play for themselves. And I think that is going to be a big deal, because those rivalry matches, we saw it happen this weekend on Merseyside with Everton and Liverpool playing to a 0-0 draw. Everton at times looked like they were the better team. And there's that added twist about a derby like that I think will possibly come into play, where you could see City drop points in that particular match. Now, I don't think either of these teams will run the table getting to the end of the season, okay? I think let's be upfront about that. I think they will both drop points. How many points, where they'll drop them, I have no idea. But I think that City-United match really looms large for me in terms of dictating who's going to be the champion at the end of the season. Rob, what are your thoughts on the Premier League race running down the final stretch here?
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. You have two teams that are essentially, you know, fighting it off until the end, you know, only 1 point separating each other. Fact of the matter is that City only has two draws. And it's kind of weird, too, how Liverpool have more draws than losses, whereas City have more losses than draws. 23 wins for City, 2 draws, 4 losses. Liverpool, 21 wins, 7 draws, only 1 loss. And that 1 loss was, I think, against City, wasn't it? No, it was against Wolves.
It was City.
It was Manchester City. That was the only team that they have lost to this season. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because you look at these two teams just fighting it off. Obviously, you kind of have to look at the schedules a bit. I think when you have to look at, obviously, you know, they have the Champions League with Bayern Munich coming soon, but they also have big games against Spurs, Chelsea, two teams that are also looking to fight for those European spots. City, obviously, with Manchester United, as you mentioned, but they also have to play Spurs as well. Mm-hmm. So it could really go either, and obviously the Champions League against Schalke. And you have to look at this, Joe. Both of these ties, they are far from over. Even though City did win the first leg 3-2 over there in Germany, that tie is far from over. So you could really not, and obviously the 0-0 draw between Liverpool and Bayern. So these two teams are fighting it off here. I think it's going to be really close. I think it's a matter of, yes, even though a draw is a bad thing, I think, mm-hmm. I personally think, the first team that loses a game, that loses, not draw, but lose. If one of these teams lose again, mm-hmm. then the title is over.
So then, let me ask you this. Let's look at the schedule moving forward to the end of the season for both teams.
Yes.
And I'm going to rattle off the matches for you here, and I'm going to exclude the Champions League matches for both of them. And also keep in mind, City are in the FA Cup still, where Liverpool
That's
are
right.
not. So that adds a little extra twist. Mm-hmm. To the end of the road here, City have Watford at home, Fulham on the road, Cardiff at home, Palace on the road, Spurs at home, United on the road, Burnley on the road, Leicester at home, and Brighton on the road. So there are some pretty soft spots there. I mean, Watford is certainly not a soft spot for them. Let's be honest with that. Fulham, I think, is a soft spot. Brighton can be a soft spot. Burnley can be a soft spot. Even Palace to an extent, and Cardiff, okay? But I think, you know, Spurs at home, United on the road, surely. Leicester is not going to be that easy, I don't think, but it'll be at home, so they should be successful there. I'm looking at especially the Spurs and United matchups. They're back to back, one on the 20th of April, the other on the 24th of April. So there's not much distance. You worry about Champions League. If they do progress against Schalke, which, by the way, Schalke, in since Weston McKennie's been injured, they've conceded 9 goals and have not scored one. So they're in a bit of trouble. And with the 3 road goals, I do think the City tie with them is pretty much done and dusted. But, you know, you've got to go Spurs at home, United on the road.
You also have to look at injuries as well and suspensions for Manchester City.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, suspensions for that particular, you know, at that point, we won't know yet, right? We're gonna have to wait a little ways on that. But injuries, again, we don't know how long this De Bruyne injury is going to last. So that's going to be a certain concern for Manchester City moving forward, because he is their talisman. You know, he is the guy that kind of makes things go for them. So I'm just trying to call up. For some reason, I can't seem to get into the standings to look at Liverpool quickly, but if you'll bear with me 1 second, I just want to call up their schedule because I want to give you what they're looking at moving forward. And again, they're not in the FA Cup, so that is a big bonus to them. But their season closes at home to Burnley, on the road to Fulham, at home to Spurs, then on the road to Southampton, at home to Chelsea, on the road to Cardiff, at home to Huddersfield, on the road at Newcastle, and then the final match of the season is at home for Wolves. Now, granted, the landing spot at the end for Liverpool is not as soft. Wolves is going to be difficult. Newcastle, we've seen what Almiron has done, so that's going to be a little tougher for them. I do like the fact, though, that they get Chelsea and Tottenham Hotspur with space between the two matches, both at home
as well.
Exactly. That is for me to have those teams go to Anfield and, you know, little Jekyll and Hyde on both teams as of late, right? I mean, with Chelsea and Spurs. So you don't know what you're going to get. You're going to either get magnificent play out of both teams or you're going to get garbage. And we don't know which way it's going to be. So I think, for me, this path is a little softer for Liverpool, right? But I think there won't be a clear picture on this. And I think we're going to come down to the last week or two of the season before we say, yeah, this is going to be the guy or that's going to be the team. But given the opportunity right now, because you and I both picked Liverpool to win the EPL, would you change your prediction right now?
No. Not yet.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either.
I still think Liverpool can do something because I feel that. In all honesty, let's be honest, Joe. You're more confident in City winning their tie against Schalke than Liverpool is confident in winning their tie against Bayern.
Yes.
All right. There you go. Should they get eliminated? Should they?
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that for Liverpool, I think now the ambition and the plan is to win the Premier League, because they haven't done so in almost 30 years. They will, if they get knocked out, which you don't know, could go either way. Bayern are a good team, but, you know, could go either way.
Right.
Then, if they get knocked out, all of the energy goes to the league right now.
Yeah.
That's where I see Liverpool having the advantage. City might have the depth. They also have some injuries. They have some suspension in the Champions League. But I have this feeling that if you compare the two schedules, the teams that they're playing, and the competitions that City have to deal with, you give Liverpool the advantage, I think, because you don't have that much of a rotation of a team to give. So, and that might go City's way because they could rotate in certain competitions. But it's very tough to call, but I still think Liverpool edge it. But maybe a point.
And that's the feeling I have as well. So I want to continue this discussion, Rob, you know, without a doubt. And I think we should do it with our special guest. So joining us now on Low Limit Football from Atlanta Sports HQ is Matt Fowler. Matt, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Thanks for having me, guys. Really excited to talk about this with you guys.
We're glad to have you on. Let's kick off. We were talking about the chances of Liverpool and City. Who would win the EPL title, especially given that City overtook them on the weekend. You know, Liverpool had the tough draw in the Merseyside Derby. And things are really up in the air at this point. We kind of looked at the schedules a little bit. I think Rob and I feel that the path to the end of the to the finish line in the EPL is a little tougher for City than it is for United. Also, City are in the FA Cup still, where Liverpool, I'm sorry, Liverpool and City, where Liverpool is not in the FA Cup anymore. So I think there's a distinct advantage to not having to play those extra matches. We look at the De Bruyne injury on the weekend, which we don't know the extent of it as of yet. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. And I'd like your opinion on, you know, where the race has gotten to at this point and where we think it'll go.
I think you got to look at the squad that City has that they put together. Like, obviously, they have one of the best managers in the world, but Klopp has proven that he can go toe-to-toe with them. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you saw Liverpool kind of slip up on the weekend, and the goals have kind of dried up for Salah. And, you know, we mentioned the KDB injury, but look who they brought on. Riyad Mahrez, the player of the year 2 years ago, two or three years ago. And so in that sense, I know they're in different competitions, but I still think they'll be able to maintain the rate that they're at for points to pit Liverpool for the title. Okay. I really don't know. I don't want to say it's a curse, but all I know is I'm 22 years old and Liverpool have not won the Premier League since I've been alive.
I think a lot of people are pointing to that fact right now, but are you concerned about the De Bruyne injury? And again, like I said, I haven't heard what the extent of the injury is, but I know he was subbed off for Riyad Mahrez, who eventually scored the winning goal in the match on the weekend.
Yes and no, in a sense of his production hasn't really been there in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Not like it was a year ago. He's not on like record-setting pace that he was in 2017-18. So I think they're getting production from players like Bernardo Silva, and Raheem Sterling's still just on the rise, man. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think they're going to miss him as much in the Premier League. I think the Champions League and FA Cup are where they could miss out on him.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. I know we want to talk some MLS, and we're definitely going to go down that path in a minute, but I want to leave the Miguel Almirón stuff to my man, you know, Rob, who is all Miguel Almirón all the time. He knows everything about Almirón. He knows more about Almirón than Almirón knows about Almirón.
Yeah, let's go with that, Joe. Yeah, so, I don't want to sound too stalkerish. Don't call me.
No, none of that. So I want to stick with the EPL, and I want to get to the Tottenham Arsenal matchup on the weekend, because this match became a disaster, I think, for me. You know, opening, and I'm just kind of looking through the match summary here, just to kind of replay everything in my mind as to what happened. And I want to start out with the Danny Rose play, where he runs, when he goes after the ball and actually basically cleats Berg Leno in the chest, studs up, almost for the most part leaves his feet, only comes in with one stud, but almost leaves his feet. That play is whistled as a yellow card. I think if that, for some reason, I feel like if that happens anywhere else on the pitch, it's a red card to any player. So that was the initial mess, I guess, where it started. Then we fast forward to the penalty kick that was saved. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Let's move to the Harry Kane play, right, where he's given the penalty. But Harry Kane clearly at least a shoulder length offsides on the play, gets fouled in the box, given the penalty. We're tied at 1-1. Then we fast forward to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and his penalty that is taken. He misses the penalty, but at the same time, Jan Vertonghen is almost standing on the spot as he strikes the ball. Again, not called. And then obviously at the end with Lucas Torreira picking up the red card, something that was probably seen as a red card, I think, by most people. But when you rewind to the Danny Rose foul, doesn't make sense as to why that was red carded. So, I mean, this all happened in like the Danny Rose foul. I'm actually looking at it now, is in the 69th minute. I mean, my God, the last 20 minutes of the match just went to total hell. So what were your thoughts on this match especially as this drama all unfolded?
I mean, it's just like your heart's pumping because it's a derby. I'm an Arsenal fan. So my heart is just going through the roof because I don't want to lose this game again, because since Pochettino's come in, it's been difficult for Arsenal to win the derby. Until these last 2 years, the home match, they've struggled to beat Pochettino. So here I am thinking, finally we can get him, because Arsenal is obviously not what they used to be. And so you see this in hindsight, you ask, where the hell is VAR?
Yeah.
You need it. Mm-hmm. Because obviously it's coming in next year. But if you had to take a match and say, this is the reason why we need VAR, that was it. I mean, you're talking studs up direct right into the chest of Bernard Leno. And then I don't know how you could miss Vertonghen. Just he's halfway. He almost got to the ball before Aubameyang did.
I know.
And obviously it was a terrible penalty, but he should have gotten an opportunity to take it again. Mm-hmm. And granted how bad the first chance was, I'm not sure he'd be the one. I guess he has to take it again, but it wouldn't have been good.
Right. Well, you know, the Vertonghen thing actually is even – it's magnified, because not only does he step way into the box before the ball is even struck, he's actually the player that clears it off the line and makes the defensive play after the save. So it's like a double jeopardy for me.
I all I can say is it's just a robbery. It was just a robbery. And in a high leverage match like that, and Arsenal's still fighting to get in the Champions League. They seem like they're lackluster and all this, but they still have a shot to get fourth. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Chelsea's the favorites right now for it, but I think Arsenal. They have a chance here, and they got robbed of 2 points that could end up being crucial come May.
You know, Matt, obviously now I think we'll jump into stateside and talk about essentially Atlanta United a little bit. You know, obviously they did drop points the other day against DC United. You know, not the best, I would say. Well, you know, it's still early days, but they did drop points to Herediano in the Champions League, even though they did reverse that tie. You know, it's been quite of a different vibe so far in 2019 for Atlanta. But going forward, obviously, you look at a team that, you know, just lost essentially their star player, their playmaker to Newcastle. You know, they lost Tata Martino, I think an influential manager in any sense or any team. So now comes Frank de Boer, comes in Petey Martinez, the two replacements for the aforementioned men. What are your expectations for this league so far, and or not this league, but this season so far for Atlanta? You know, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be much more added pressure. But what do you see differently now with this team as opposed to what you saw last year?
I see a lot less just like pedal to the metal, but. You know, you have those two changes. Obviously, Tata being gone and Frank de Boer coming in. They play the same formation, but completely different styles. So it's going to take a while for the cohesion to be there, for the chemistry. And I think you've seen that in two of the first three games at Herediano, which I think there were some extemporaneous circumstances where the turf was just terrible, and it was – clearly a home field advantage, but you got to get over that, and you can't look as bad as you did. And then you have last night, where they generally looked either tired or they didn't want to be there or completely out of it, because DC United ran them up and down the pitch without any problem. And the wings, where Atlanta's usually supposed to have the width, Yara and Mora are just having all sorts of fun, and Paul Areola is tearing apart LGP at the end, and it was just bad, and Atlanta really didn't deserve to have anything in that game, and DC United made them pay for it. So that's kind of a preview of what it's going to look like for the first few months, in my opinion. It's going to be very up and down, but you have games like you had Thursday night where they reversed the tie against Herediano, where you're going to be like, well, dang, that's the best team in the league on their day. And it's something that Atlanta fans specifically are going to have to get used to, because it's not going to be all happy days and sunshine and daisies, because there's still some changes to be worked in. And it's a new system. And it's going to take a few months to get used to it.
Obviously, Atlanta are in the CONCACAF Champions League with a big tie against Monterrey, a really strong Monterrey side. You know, do you have this fear that perhaps Atlanta, with the team that they have, obviously, you know, they do have the depth, but do they have enough depth is the big question. You know, having to deal with those two competitions, do you feel that all the attention and all the effort being made in the CONCACAF Champions League will affect the league season, or do you feel that they still have the team to compete for both the titles?
I think the squad's there, but not against. I think you have to play them, rotate the squad in a league game so that you know you can get a result in. Last night, he played mostly the same squad he played on Thursday with a few changes with Ambrose, and it was Tito in for Pity, and it wasn't very good, but it was still the first squad, and it was just a disastrous result. So I think the squad's there, but you gotta – any injuries to Joseph or Nagby, somebody like that, there's no depth in those crucial areas to really make any strides. Like, that's what TFC got screwed up with last year. They had to play Michael Bradley at center back in the CCL final and still nearly won it. Atlanta, on their day, can hang with anybody on the continent, but whether or not they get run into the ground in the meantime with these first few fixtures in MLS, it could be a struggle. I think the squad's got the talent. I'm not sure that they have all the cohesion they need right now.
No, it's going to be a really tough season for them. Now, let's shift more gears and more of a positive standpoint. And let's talk about our favorite smiling Paraguayan who is killing it over there in Newcastle. That's Miguel Almirón. I mean, obviously from your first impressions, Matt, and obviously we've spoken various times about this, but, you know, just your first impressions on so far his move at Newcastle. You know, how has that been taken by the Atlanta fans, you know, supporting him? Maybe, you know, unfortunately there had been some comments perhaps being made about him leaving during the wrong time or in the wrong circumstances. You know, how does this affect Atlanta as a whole? You know, just your whole take on all this. And also, you know, is this the first big sign that should he succeed? And we're all hopeful that he does succeed. If he does succeed, you know, what would this mean, I think, for the league trying to get much more talent and being poached by the top five leagues?
Well, I think last night you kind of saw it because you kind of had a sneak preview of it last year when Miggy got hurt, but now you really see it. That engine that Miggy has, it's just everything about him is infectious. His talent and his smile, but his work rate is something that I don't think Newcastle fans or anybody that has a outside view of MLS expected. And that's something that Atlanta was missing, just an emotional engine that you can rely on week in and week out. And so it's that kind of effort that made him so good at MLS and that makes the transition for him at Newcastle so easy. But you saw where Miggy was missing last night. I think the next guy that you're going to see move to Europe is Luto Acosta. Because last night, that game was all him, man. He was making Atlanta look silly. And he was in Paris on the transfer deadline day. He was going to be the second MLS player to go for double digit figures to a top five league, and the deal just didn't happen. So I think he's come back more motivated to make sure to make PSG pay. So I think you're going to see more of that. I think Lucho Acosta's the next one, and I think the next step is you're going to see young players like George Bello for Atlanta United, the left back. I know he struggled in the Champions League, but he's a massive talent that has scouts looking at him. And players like Diego Rossi for LAFC that are really talented, you're going to start seeing those guys move. Because, like I said, every game that you watch Miguel Almirón in the Premier League, what's the first name they mention? The first two things that they mention: Atlanta United and MLS. And people, that's something new and refreshing. And that's something that is going to start to turn some heads.
Right. No, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, this is, it's a big move for all parties, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's going to turn heads, not so much because of the success Miggy had here in MLS, but what he's doing so far in the early returns at Newcastle. And Matt, I agree with you. You know, it's almost amazing to see that the Luciano Acosta move to PSG fell apart, because he absolutely owned that match against Atlanta last night. I thought the goal for me was a little on the softer side. I thought Guzan should have had that. But still, you can see that ball swerve, knuckle, and then skip off the pitch, and it's just a blistering shot. I also like the mention of Diego Rossi because he himself, too, had a fantastic a match for LAFC, part of a win for them against Sporting KC last night as well. So two of, I think, the up-and-coming talents. You know, one that I want to mention is obviously PT Martinez comes over here from River Plate after winning the Copa Libertadores. Do you see PT Martinez? I mean, obviously, our book of business here is very, very small, and our sample size is very small for what he's done in MLS. But do you see him kind of following that same path maybe in 2 years as well as the next guy to make that jump?
I don't think it's going to be the same figures because Miggy's leaving at 25 and PT's coming at 25.
Okay.
But I do think that, you know, it's not often that you see an MLS player get called into the Argentina national team. Mm-hmm. And that happened for the first time this week. And that's something it's different, you know, right. But I don't think he's going to be the same price tag as Miggy. I think the talent's about equivalent. And I think you're starting to see the difference between the two players as well. But, you know, like you said, the sample size is too small. And last night when he came on, he obviously you see flashes, but then you see moments where he puts his head down.
Right.
And you don't, like, if something good doesn't go his way, it's things that MLS is weird. So you can't be affected by random games. And that's going to be a big question for me.
So I want to pose a follow up, you know, in kind of in relation to this with PT and his performance at Atlanta United, you know, for what we've seen so far, because, you know, and this is something I've said to Rob, you know, off the air, that I don't think Frank DeBoer is a good coach. I just don't. He was highly unsuccessful at Inter. He was extremely unsuccessful. Probably one of the worst managers in Palace history. You bring him over to take over for Tata Martino, and I know there's the formations are similar, but it's the style of coaching and the ability to adapt where I think DeBoer is nowhere near the level of Tata Martino. So, you know, is Frank DeBoer, given the talent they have, especially the South American pieces that they have in Joseph Martinez, Ezequiel Barco, now they bring on PT Martinez, you have Gonzalo Perez on this team as well. Was he the right choice, or would you have preferred to see somebody else? Especially now, we look at Matias Almeida that comes on, Guillermo Belo Scalotto goes over to LA. You know, we have influx of South American coaches as well as South American players. Was DeBoer the right choice in your opinion, or should they have gone somewhere else?
To be honest, I think, like you said, it's early days, and he does have a spotty history recently. After Ajax, it's pretty much been all downhill, and this is his last shot at being considered as an up and coming manager, because this is the best squad in the league. This is the best talent he's had in comparison to the rest of the league. So that he's had in his career. Now, as from an Atlanta fan point of view, we've had no reason to not trust Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra. That's my thinking regarding Frank DeBoer.
Okay. Let's jump off of that. Let's look at a couple of the other matches that happened on the weekend real quick before we let you go. One that I want to focus on is the Colorado-Portland match. Played in the coldest conditions ever for an MLS match. By the report that I saw, it was -7 degrees at kickoff. You see the pictures of ice on the referee's head and that sort of thing. But my question is, the one thing that I've always hated, I guess the hate is a good word, I've hated about the MLS, is the fact that they won't conform to the European schedule. And the argument has always been that you can't play these matches on X days because it's too cold in this country. And then we go and play a -7 degree match in Colorado, Portland. So isn't the argument of weather in the United States really a crappy one, because you could structure the schedule to play in warmer climates during those colder days and then move those matches up north? Because you can play in New York in the middle of March and end of March. So couldn't you structure the schedule so that you're playing in Orlando and you're playing in Dallas and you're playing in Houston and, you know, and you're playing in L.A. on those really cold months, you know, from like, let's say, January 1 to February 1, and then start to filter it back up north through your schedule? It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely. I think it's a fair argument. But I think the flip side of that is you're going to have people complain. You're going to have teams complaining that they're going to get that because of the geography, they're getting the short end of the stick. Mm. But to your point, there's as many heat issues here as there is cold.
Yeah.
There's as many, like if you play a day game in Orlando in June, that's as bad as playing what you saw last night, mm-hmm. or on Saturday.
Agreed.
Where you literally have icicles on the referee's hair. Mm-hmm. His eyebrows are frozen.
Right. I mean, yeah. You know, even just to take it a step further, for me, you don't get the full effect of what MLS can offer you through their players, because every time we turn around, like last year, we had a World Cup. This year, we're going to have Copa America. You know, we're going to get Euros. And you know, we're going to lose these players again in the middle of the season as these teams are making runs. It was one of the things actually TFC even complained about, because you're sending Michael Bradley, you're sending Jozy Altidore, you're losing those players. Even to an extent, you were going to lose Sebastian Giovinco, you know, back at the time. So it would just make more sense to conform to the FIFA schedule and allow your players to play with those national teams when they get released on those national dates, so that we're not compromising the integrity of the title race in MLS, right?
Right. I think that when it comes to the weather, that's different. But Copa America, that's going to absolutely destroy Atlanta United's squad. That's sure. Your champion, and they're just gutted. Mm-hmm. Right. And you, Diego Rossi, Uruguayan, he's a chance to be in the Uruguay squad, mm-hmm. for Copa America. Things like the U-20 tournaments, those go on in the summer, and that's some place that the league is going. Like Atlanta spent a record transfer on Ezequiel Barco for the U-20 tournament. Right. The U-20 World Cup is coming up, and guess what's coming up? Ezequiel Barco has to go. That's all three DPs potentially gone for Atlanta United in an important time. And they're four best players because Tito has to play for Paraguay.
Right. Last question before we let you go. Obviously, week one of the MLS season, we've got a long ways to go to get to the championship in late November, early December. Rob and I, we're going to make our predictions in a second. I sent Rob a long message last night, a diatribe as to how I think MLS is going to unfold, which I'll read back afterwards. But in your opinion, who is your MLS Cup champion this year?
I think they get it together. I think it's Atlanta United. Okay. Just based off pure talent and everything. I think Frank DeBoer manages to get it together. I know you said he's not a great coach, but I think they're able to overcome it. I think there's such a talent gap regarding that front four. There's too much there to not understand what to do. And if they get home field, it's tough to play in that environment if you're not used to it. If you're in a wayside,
definitely. Do they advance past Monterrey in the CONCACAF Champions League?
After what I saw last night, no.
I know. I hope you're wrong, man. I hope you're wrong because I'm rooting for him. But yeah, that was a little tough last night. Before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find you on the internet.
On Twitter at Matt Lanta, but instead of an L, it's an I. So at Matt Lanta. And as well, find my content on atlsportshq.com. And I also have a podcast with my buddy Sharif. Matt and Sharif show on iTunes, so you can find me there.
Awesome, man. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. We definitely enjoyed it and look forward to speaking with you definitely over the MLS course of the MLS season, man.
Thank you for having me.
All right, have a good night.
You too.
And that was Matt Fowler. Fantastic to catch up with him and have him on the show and get to talk all things MLS. Rob, before we run into our topics, I'm going to read you my MLS but message that I sent to you as soon as I can find it here, you know, but let's see here. So my predictions, this was my message to you last night. I'm picking LAFC to win it all. It's a good team that was a little unlucky in the end last year. I think TFC finishes near the bottom again, and DeBoer takes the champs to mid-table, which is okay by MLS standards. DC's going to win the East with a hard-pressing New York Red Bull, and Portland's going to top the West with LAFC just second, ahead of Sporting Kansas City. Those are my predictions for MLS in general, Rob. So I've got LAFC winning it all. I'm going on the record. What do you got, man?
I'm going LAFC as well.
All right. All right. I like it. Let me ask you this. Does Latan win the scoring title, or is it Joseph Martinez again?
I'll go for Joseph again.
I'm going opposite. I'm going Zlatan. I think the guy's got enough balls that he's gonna do it. You know what I mean? The only key is gonna be, is he gonna stay healthy? That's my only question. But if he stays healthy, he's my goal scoring champion. I don't think he breaks Joseph Martinez's record, but I think he wins the scoring title. And he's already off to that start. He scored a goal on the weekend in their match as well. So we'll have to see how it goes from there. So let's jump into some topics, Rob. And first and foremost, man, let's go back and look at El Clasico. Happened on the weekend, a 1-0 win for Barca over Real Madrid. Really, in terms of the La Liga title race, I don't think it's secured the title race for Barca, but I think it's eliminated Real Madrid from the race. Barca going on and winning not only midweek in the Copa del Rey and eliminating Real Madrid, then going on the weekend and playing in La Liga. Both matches, by the way, at the Santiago Bernabeu. Barca now have 96 wins versus Real Madrid's 95 in El Clasicos. Man, what are your thoughts on the match from this weekend?
Yeah, no, it's been a really interesting season, I think, for Barcelona, for Real Madrid, period. I think, you know, to win all those three El Clasicos, sorry, the, you know, tie El Clasico, one tie, one El Clasico, and
no,
they
won all three.
I'm pretty sure they tied one, didn't they?
No, the first match was. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It was. Yeah. So there have been four El Clasicos this year, not
right.
Three. There have been four. Three Barca wins and one,
yep,
draw in the Copa del Rey. 1-1.
That's
at,
right.
At the
That's
new
right.
Camp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just been an absolute. For the first time, they've surpassed Real Madrid in wins in overall El Clasicos in the first time, I think, 84 years. So, mm-hmm, yeah, it's been running riot, I think, for Barcelona this season. Like I said, Joe, I think the league's over.
You think so?
I won't say it's over yet, but I think for Real Madrid, it's over. I don't think they'll catch up. They still could catch. Atletico can still catch up, but it's going to be really tough.
Sure.
Honestly.
Absolutely.
I don't see anyone stopping this Barca side besides Atletico. They still have to play each other April 7th. So that could be, I think, if Barca do win that title decider game, league's over for me.
Yeah, they could get drawn back into the race if Atleti win it, but I think you're right. I think any points out of that match, out of Barca, will solidify the title for them again. Ivan Rakitic's 26-minute goal in this match on the weekend, the decider, and Barca won, Real Madrid nil, and just dominance over them over this past season with three wins and one draw. So let's we talked about the race in the EPL in England. We gave it quite some time. You could almost argue, Rob, that the race in Germany is actually better, with two teams tied on points and really only separated by two goals. Dortmund and Bayern Munich have only given up 27 goals each. Bayern scored 56. Dortmund scored 58. They also, the key here, where I think one thing that would make really mouthwatering matchup or a really mouthwatering storyline would be if Liverpool and City still had to play each other in EPL. We don't have that anymore. Dortmund and Bayern still face each other. I want to say it is April 20th. So we still have another Der Klassiker coming up where we could see a massive, massive swing in this title race. But this has got to be one of the most exciting title races we're going to see in Germany in a long time, don't you think?
No, absolutely. It's finally one that we're going to deeply appreciate. Obviously, many people say, oh, it's Bayern's to lose now because of how it's always going to be Bayern Munich. But you still have a race there. You also have to look at the race not just on the top of the league. You also have the teams fighting for European competitions. You have, you know, Leipzig, Mönchengladbach, Frankfurt, and Bayern. Leverkusen currently on those positions, but you still have teams like Wolfsburg, Hertha Berlin, and Hoffenheim, even Werder Bremen fighting for those spots. You also have to look at the bottom half of the table, Joe, and also look at the relegation zone, because you still have teams that are fighting it off. Nuremberg, Hanover, Stuttgart, Oxford, and a team that, you know, is not really known for being here, and that's Schalke. Schalke are only 4 points ahead of the out of the relegation qualification zone. So that's going to be really interesting to see what happens to them. If they could really bounce back from them, if they can bounce back from those losses, then I think it's safety for them. But there is the possibility that Schalke could indeed make it to the relegation zone and to the qualification spot, and that would be really, really drama-filled.
Yeah, Schalke's lost four of their last five, including dropping a 4-0 result on the weekend at Dusseldorf. Dusseldorf is newly promoted as well, so just things are going well. And like I'd said, since Weston McKennie's injury, they've conceded 9 goals. They've scored 0. They haven't won anything. And they lost 4 of their last 5. You look at the top of the table, like you said, and it's 6 points separating third place RB Leipzig from 7th place Wolfsburg. So you've got just a matter of a couple of games that could drop teams like Leipzig, Mönchengladbach, Leverkusen, Eintracht Frankfurt. We've talked about them at length with Jack Grimsey and with Luka Jovic and what he's done. That's a team that is on the brink. They're only 1 point into that Europa spot and 3 points outside of that Champions League spot. So these are massive, massive swings that can happen outside of that title race. But you know, Rob, with the Bundesliga, that storyline is something we have seen year in and year out. I think the last 3 or 4 years, we have seen those. Everyone complains about the fact that Bayern always wins the league, but those tight races from literally second to like 10th have been going on now for a few years, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's been, thankfully, we've been able to see that. But unfortunately, there are some leagues that don't have those races, and we just hope that we can see some competitors. I think we can only see that France is not, with a certain exception, with France, you get that in Spain, you kind of get that in Germany. Italy, you have to see, someone has to, and with all due respect, Joe, someone has to break Juventus' spell. I know you don't want it to happen, but someone has to do it. Yeah. Someone has to break Bayern's spell. Someone has to break Barca and Real's spell. England, I think, is obviously the parity. Someone has to break PSG's spell, even though we saw that with Monaco a couple years ago. But I think that parity is just something that makes it more interesting to see.
Definitely, no doubt about it. So one more thing to talk about tonight, Rob, before we get to matches of the week and the trivia answer, is the schedule. The groups are finally set in the Copa Libertadores 2019. Mm-hmm. It feels like, and I know because we had all the mess, it feels like the 2018 Copa Lib just ended, like, yesterday. Yes. But the group stages of the Copa Lib kicks off on April 3rd. So which is right around the corner, Group A. And I'm just going to run through the groups real quick, Rob.
Yep.
Group A, River Plate, Internacional in Brazil, Alianz Lima and Palestino. Group B, Cruzeiro, Emelec, Huracan and Deportivo Lara. Group C, Olimpia, Sporting Cristal, Godoy Cruz, Universidad de Concepción out of Chile in Group C. In Group D, Peñarol, Flamengo, LDU Quito, and San Jose, the Bolivian side, are Group D. Group E, Nacional, Cerro Porteño, Zamora, Atletico Mineiro. Group F gives us Palmeiras, San Lorenzo, Junior, and Melgar. I believe Melgar, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, last team to qualify, right?
That's right. They qualified in the qualifiers. They beat Caracas.
That's right. Group G, Boca Juniors, the runners-up last year. Atletico Paranaense, Jorge Wilstermann from Bolivia, and Deportes Tolima in Group G. Group H, the final group, Gremio, Universidad Católica, Rosario, and Libertad. Part of me is like, wait a minute, I didn't say River Plate. Of course I did. I said them first because they're defending champions. So, Rob, which of these groups is most tasty to you, going into the competition?
You know, they're all tasty. I think for myself, I would love, well, obviously I'm going to follow Cerro Porteño. They have a tough group, Nacional, Mineiro, two really strong teams in their respective countries. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen with I think I like that last group. I like Gremio. Gremio are a really good team. They just lost their they won the Libertadores 2 years ago. They have a really good coach in Renato Gaúcho. Libertad, you know, a team that has obviously been spending a lot of money to get into the competition, eliminated Atlético Nacional, the champion 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Rosario Central, a really good team as well. You know, really good in the sense of having some good players. Católica as well. So I mean, they're all interesting groups. I think that's the beauty of this Libertadores, is that anything can happen. You can't predict. It's not like the Champions League where you could predict 2-3 teams easily. I think for here, it's up for anyone at this point. So is it bad to say that? I don't know. It can go either way, man. Yeah. It can go. But I'm excited. You know, the season, the teams, sorry, the games start this weekend. sorry, this week, we got some good games happening. We got Olimpia, Flamengo, San Lorenzo, Libertad, Boca, all tomorrow. You got River on Wednesday, Cedro on also on Wednesday. You have a lot of great games, Joe, and I'm really excited to see it.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on the Group H one. I saw that one come out. Rosario, you know, Libertad has been playing well, and Gremio is always difficult. You know, and like you said, the Cerro Porteño group with Nacional and Atletico Mineiro looks difficult too. I think River got a little bit of an easy run on this one with Internacional. Alianz Lima is probably the most challenging team, I think, Rob. But, I don't think any of them challenge River Plate moving forward. And then, you know, other than that, you know, as the Libertadores is, it can go any other way. But I think, like you said, that Group H is really for me the tastiest of the groups as well. So, and I saw that with Atletico Nacional getting eliminated at home, if I remember correctly, too, in that last match. So, you know, this is how difficult it is to get into this particular competition that one of the previous champions is eliminated before we get to the group stage. So, again, that tournament will kick off April 3rd. And make sure you catch the BN Sports tweets on that particular
April 3rd. No, it starts tomorrow, Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry. March 6th. Sorry about that. That's right. You know
March 5th. March 5th.
Oh, and I don't even have any of the matches labeled in there because Olimpia Godoy Cruz is going to be tomorrow. I'm just looking through here real quick. Zamora Nacional is going to be tomorrow. I'm sorry. That's the 6th. George Wisterman is going to play Boca Juniors, like you said. And, yeah, so I missed those matches. So that'll be a good lead right into our match of the week listing because I just was able to give you a couple of them. But so you've got your Copa Lib going on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week as well, the multiple matches. Let's go back to the other matches of the week coming up this week where we have in the Champions League on Tuesday, we have Borussia Dortmund, Tottenham Hotspur. Dortmund playing at home, down 3-0 on aggregate to Spurs. But we know Dortmund can score plenty of goals, one of the top scoring teams in the Bundesliga. And Spurs, obviously with a tough, tough battle on the weekend against Arsenal, going to be interesting to see how they handle the short turnaround time in that matchup. Tomorrow night, Tuesday at 8 p.m., CONCACAF Champions League kicks off with the quarterfinals. New York Red Bull faces Santos Laguna. That's going to be in New York on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Fast forward to Wednesday, Porto Roma in the Champions League, 3 p.m. start time, 2-1 aggregate in favor of Roma, but having to go to Porto and close this one out, Porto with the road goal, this one has everything to play for. Wednesday night in the CONCACAF Champions League, Monterrey Atlanta United, first leg of that quarterfinal matchup that we were able to talk to Matt about. That is going to kick off Wednesday at 10 p.m. Then on Thursday, we have a dual Europa League matchup to offer you. Eintracht Frankfurt Inter, which I think is the best match of all the matches in the Europa League at this level. That is going to kick off at 12:55 p.m. And on Thursday at 3 p.m., you're going to get Chelsea Dynamo Kiev. And then we go back to our league coverage. On Saturday, 9:30 a.m., Bayern Munich Wolfsburg kicks off in Munich. On Sunday, we have a slew of games starting at 10 a.m. Saint-Étienne Lille in Ligue 1, followed by Arsenal Manchester United at 12:30 p.m. In La Liga, Sevilla Real Sociedad at 1:30 p.m., a battle for Champions League spots there. Fiorentina Lazio Sunday at 3:30 p.m., a battle for European spots in that one as well. And the last match to close off the night, LAFC, our predicted champion versus Portland Timbers. That one's going to be in L.A., so should be plenty warm there. We shouldn't get any freezing referees. That is going to be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then I believe this weekend, Rob, we turn our clocks forward again. So we're going to get some shifting in the Champions League times and schedules because Europe doesn't turn for another couple weeks. So with all of that said, Rob, let's get back to the trivia question. The trivia question tonight was only three teams across Europe's top five leagues have scored in every league game this season. Can you name them?
One that comes right off the bat is Manchester City.
No, they have been shut out in league this season.
Okay, another one that I will have to pick is Barcelona.
No, they've been shut out this season as well. In league.
Okay. Bayern Munich?
No. You have a team in that league has scored in every game.
Borussia Dortmund?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
This
is a tougher question than I thought. I was kind of shocked. I thought you would get two of them for sure.
No way. Juventus?
Juventus is one. They've scored in every league match this season so far.
That I know. I was going to go.
Yeah.
Give me the league. You said Germany, right?
I said Germany. Yeah, Germany's going to be the toughest one for you to get, by the way. So I'll give you the other league.
Give me the other league.
France.
PSG.
Bingo. So Juve, PSG. One more team. German Bundesliga team has scored in every league game this season so far.
Leipzig?
Nope. This one's almost impossible. I would be willing to bet out of 18 teams that you would guess, you probably wouldn't get to this one until about 9th or 10th in your guesses. And you've already given me Leipzig, Dortmund, Munich. You want me to just give it to you?
Yeah, I don't know.
I was shocked when I saw it too. Werder Bremen.
Werder Bremen.
Has scored in every league game this season so far. So, only three teams across the top five leagues in Europe have scored in every league game this season. They are Juventus, PSG, and Werder Bremen. So, with all of that under the bridge, Rob, I'm going to find the closing music and play it for us. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
All right, let's get on it right now. And we are going. Perfect. So, for episode 236 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Matt Fowler from Atlanta Sports HQ for joining us. We are off next week, and we will be returning again on March 18th. So, for episode 236 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.